woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Roll up, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Schmidt Weber on the board. S&P Futures down 5. Nasdaq Futures down 10. And we've got the Dow Futures. We have another page for those down 20. We were up last night, and now we're down. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. Doing okay.
I can't even make it, Kevin, from work to the club and home before talking to a few people and finding every person I talk to that I get a story from, the world looks like it's even more unbalanced than before the conversation. Is it just me, or should I just like get the Unabomber cabin out of the Smithsonian and go up to, where was he, in Idaho?
I would recommend it, but choose your state carefully.
Yeah, choose your state carefully.
Because the amount of liberty you will get will vary from one to the next. Although, did you see, you know, Cuomo's now saying, well, we just can't continue this, these restrictions. I don't know what changed, because he was excoriating anybody a couple of weeks ago who had that thought.
I don't understand.
By the way, your buddy Ted Kaczynski was in Montana.
Okay, what's the difference? Idaho, Montana. Everybody knows he grew up like 3 blocks from where. Well, we're not where I grew up. Where we moved when I was in high school. We went to Evergreen Park High School.
Well, that's why I called him your buddy.
Yeah, yeah. They say I knew a couple of people. I knew one guy who did go to Harvard, and came home a few years later and blew his parents away with a shotgun. And then there was Ted Kaczynski. So how's my view of Harvard? Just saying. I'm sure it's a nice place, but anyway. So Kevin, two things. One of the guys in the office gets his. Now, why naive me? Did you think that people were going to get a $600 check? And everybody if I'm wrong, please tweet in. Anybody who had their bank account with the IRS got their $600 in their bank account like 2 weeks ago, right? Or a week and a half or something.
Yeah, via ACH.
Yeah, and so if you didn't, now last time everybody got a check. This time, now why would anybody just get a check again? Why would anybody do something that simple and that stupid? Now this time, everybody's getting a debit card. Okay, but not just a debit card that you can go use. You've got to go online. Now, of course, a lot of people that are getting the $600 maybe don't have a computer at home, or maybe don't have an access. I don't know. They have to go on and sign up and get your PIN number, okay? Instead of just taking the check either to the bank account, if you don't have one, down to the currency exchange and cashing the damn thing. So not only that, when you get your PIN number, from what I understand, and again, I haven't done this myself yet, but I'm interviewing people, Cub Reporter, Jimmy Olsen, and if you use it at Walgreens, Target, or CVS, you don't have to pay a fee or something. Other places, if you just take it to your bank and say, here's my card, put it in my account like a check would have, I think it's $4 or $5 or something, as was what I was told. Now, this is the same Walgreens and CVS that we can't go, we don't seem to be able to go vaccinate people because we got to go through them. Kevin, who the hell is their lobbyist, and how much money is this guy or lady making? What do you even think of something like that? If you were president,
not me. I don't know. You know, I'd need to see more details about it, Tom, before I could really.
Well, I know you're not getting checks.
Offer an opinion on it. What are they doing? Saying Walgreens doesn't have to pay
the fee.
Percent, the 1% or whatever it is that they pay on every transaction.
Evidently. That there's some ATMs in the Walgreens are favored over other ones or something.
It's the ATM fee you're talking about.
I think if you buy stuff there too, you're not. I'm not 100% sure. All I know is
there's a discount fee that everybody has to pay if you for accepting cards. I mean, it's the interchange fee that is built into the system, and you know what that means is everybody negotiates a deal, presumably with the whoever their merchant bank is, which in Walgreens is probably a major national bank, and they have to pay a percentage of every transaction for accepting the card, and it could be 2-2.5% for a small business, as you know, and it's all credit risk rated and all that kind of stuff, and then but for a big business like Walgreens or Walmart, it's a percent or less.
Okay, so
which is why they really prefer that you use your card as a debit card, because that looks more like an ATM transaction, which is probably 10 to 15 cents. Whereas if you go buy a big ticket item or a basket of groceries or anything like that and pay 1% of it, it's going to be more. You know, a $100 basket of groceries, even at 1%, is going to be $1. Whereas the debit card side of the equation, that part of the transaction, if you do it through what is essentially the ATM network, is going to be more like 10 to 15 cents.
Well, I've been accused this week, Huge, of skipping around on topics, but the reason why I do is because I think they're all the same topic, and it's chicanery or something. But walk me through this. I know you're not as close to this as maybe Brendan or Lou or something, but walk me through this. I'm the president. I'm something. I'm in Congress. I'm some buffoon in Washington. And I say, okay, we're sending everybody $600 checks, but just like we sent them $1,200 last time. Who walks into my place, either on the executive side or the Treasury side or the Congress side, and says, wait a minute, I got a better idea. what would that idea be? Well, why don't we send everybody debit cards? Why the hell would we do that? And who do we have to pay? Well, me. Okay.
Well, that's part of the equation, Tom, but there are a lot of people at the very lowest end of the economic spectrum who do not have bank accounts.
Okay, and they probably don't have computers either.
Well, that's probably true, although they may have access to them via public library or something like that.
I'm saying if you don't have a bank account, your ability or your familiarity with a debit card's got to be close to zero. If you never had a bank account, you can't have a debit card.
Except that whatever they call food stamps nowadays, that program is done by card.
Okay, I'm just saying how do we all get from the check to this thing, and is it a positive for the government, a negative? Who makes money on it, and how the hell do they manage to get their nose into that in a 2-week period? I mean, I'm just astounded by the system. I just like to know how the hell it works. I mean, who gets to open the door? How does the Walgreens guy, is he waiting at the door for this? What's the sequence? I'm always it's back
to
my.
Yeah, I would have no idea what the answer to that is. It is, however, possible that there was some feedback from round one on this that said, "Hey, you just made it really, really difficult for this underserved part of the population to actually go ahead and have access to the money. You made it more difficult. You sent them to currency exchanges or check cashing places or so on that charged them a lot of money."
But we do this with Social Security all the time. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'm just saying, what is the process, and is there somebody? Now, I would have no problem, Kevin, if there were four sober people, and I don't mean sober as in booze, from where two of them are from each side of the aisle, representative of the Senate.
Wait a minute. You're talking about like sober thinking people in Congress?
Yeah. But if you hit, well, that's right. I mean, if I thought for a second that there were four sober-minded people that could get in a room and say, okay, if we send out a debit card, these are the five advantages and five disadvantages, and if we send out a check, the same thing, and make that call. I wouldn't have a problem with it, because maybe the advantages outweigh the other. I'm asking the question. I just don't think that ever happens. Do you?
Let me put it this way. I don't trust it to happen.
No, and if this goes on, I mean, what else are these guys involved in?
On the other hand, though, this may be a good idea. So I'm not going to dismiss the possibility.
Well, I
hadn't thought about it until you brought it up this morning. So I'm not going to have a strong opinion on it. I've tried to, just step back on the fly and give you a thought about why it might be, a decent thing, but I don't really know the answer to that.
Well, the reason.
By the way, they in their statement they say the debit card can be used anywhere debit cards are accepted, including in person, online, or over the phone. That means that people can use the card for shopping or to pay rent, utilities, or other bills. You can also withdraw cash from the debit card for free at an in-network ATM or transfer the funds to a bank account without fees, as was the case with the first round of debit cards back in May and June.
Okay, but I got a check, small one, but I got one.
Yeah, I don't know how they determined that, but they said they sent debit cards in May and June as well.
Well, the reason why this is perked up in my feeble brain is all the issues with the vaccines not getting out there to people and blah blah blah, and all you read about, and again,
not every state, by the way,
right? Not every state, but all you read about is that there's this contract with CVS and Walgreens, okay. And meanwhile, on TV, of course, you can't believe everything you see on TV. They're one of the states that seems to be doing incredibly well is West Virginia, of all places. Right? And so they had the governor, somebody on there, who's ever doing it, might not have been the governor. And evidently, West Virginia still has, imagine how backward these guys are, still have a boatload of, I won't say mom and pop, but independent pharmacies. And they're using the independent pharmacies. And they're finding out that they're incredibly efficient at getting these vaccines out to people. So when I saw the same name on the debit card stuff, CVS and Walgreens, my conspiratorial ears immediately picked up, right?
No, but where did you see the name CVS and Walgreens on the debit card?
The guy here in the office that just got one.
So you didn't see it?
No, but he gave me a whole, he just...
Yeah,
he
was, so according to the actual release, that they have nothing to do with it. And okay. It says they will waive a first withdrawal fee from any ATM that you use, no matter what. But then going forward, after the first withdrawal fee, if you don't withdraw all of it, then you may be subject to standard ATM fees. So they advise you to use their network of ATMs, which are listed.
Yeah, which evidently the top three are the Walgreens, CVS, and Target, if they're on the list.
Yeah, so they have a list of in-network ATMs.
Yeah. So
it's not like Walgreens has an ATM. It's a Chase ATM inside of a Walgreens. It's or a Bank of America or a Citibank or something like that.
Or an independent operator of ATMs.
But regardless,
they have a relationship with a bank to gain access to the network. But there are such things as that too.
Well, that's why I told everybody, you guys included. I don't really know the details, but there definitely was. If you went through the thing, you're being pushed to those places as you work through your...
If you do multiple withdrawals, yes. The first withdrawal is automatically waived, it says. Any withdrawals after that will be subject to ATM charges unless you use an in-network ATM.
Right.
Also, we have some listeners that are tweeting us saying they still received a paper check this time.
Really?
So apparently, according to this statement here, it says about 8 million people will receive their stimulus payment on a debit card. That's not everybody. So I don't know
how do they figure out who gets what?
That I don't know. So I'm trying to figure that out.
Well, everybody that I know here in the office, or a couple guys I talked to after work yesterday, they all got the debit card. Nobody got a check that I know of. So that's a...
And that could be an Illinois thing.
Yeah, it's a sample of like eight.
I don't know.
Well, we'll see.
By the way, the funds don't expire, but your card will. So if you don't use all the funds before the expiration date on the debit card, there's a customer service line you can reach out to get your funds.
All right. Well, are they? I don't want to be sneaky.
Some people would read the details before talking about it. Just saying.
Well, I mean, I did. The person was doing it right next to me online,
Just saying.
So there might be a difference between. Well, that's why I was asking you guys, what are the details? But my question, I mean, I asked this guy, because he's another cynical.
See, that question is one of those that you need to ask before I call you.
Ah, all right. I'm just saying.
So that I can actually do the research.
All right. So what percentage of these cards, and what happens, since you guys now are so smart on this, what happens if you...
Just a 10-second Google search.
Or what happens if you blow through $500 on your card and you lose the card?
That's a good question. I assume you can contact customer service, and that's easily tracked, but I don't know.
What
because they have a dedicated customer service line for these debit cards. So, you know, like I said, if your card expires and you have funds on it, they can get you the funds. If you lose your card or your PIN number doesn't work for whatever reason, they have a dedicated customer service line.
See, you should know the answer to this, Manny, because you're in the credit card business. What percentage of people say they have the easy pass on the toll road where you got to keep replenishing the thing, or get a debit card from somebody, even from your stuff from the American Express? I'll get a debit card for Home Depot or something. What percentage of those cards go out with money left on them and never hear from people again? Either they croak, or they forget it, or they lose it, or I got $20 left on my Home Depot card and I lost it. I'm not going to go try and chase it down.
You mean like a gift card?
Yeah, well, but
which
same thing.
It can be Visa, sure. Yeah, I think that's a high percentage. That's why they love selling gift cards.
Well, I'm wondering if that's part of the government's thought on this.
Very possible.
Anyway. So what about our representative who claims he got COVID from the guys from the, even though he had a mask on, from the Republicans who didn't have a mask on, and he's convinced that they gave it to him.
I think it was a she, but not a he, but regardless, yeah, it's preposterous, especially when you consider that Congress went to the front of the line for vaccines. So my first question is, did you get a vaccine?
First of all, it is a he, because he's...
And if the answer is no, then shut up.
No, it's a he, and he's from Illinois, because his thing was, he wasn't so worried about himself, it's his wife.
Oh, okay. Well, then there's more than one.
Yeah.
But again, you know, Congress went to the front of the line for vaccines. We saw them all getting the needle stuck in their arm, you know, all the pictures in media. So, my question for the guy is, did you get a vaccine? And if not, why not?
Speaking of vaccines, I just happened to be at a medical place yesterday, all the people there had gotten their first shot. And now the Biden administration has opened, well, I guess they've done it now with Trump still president, but they've now said they were keeping half the doses backwards, in arrears, everybody got the first shot in 10 to 14 days could get the second shot. And now I think the new policy, and I don't know who it came from, is no, they're going to put all the stuff out there for the first shot and the second shot you get when you get. So all these people have their first shot and don't know when they're going to get their second shot. I don't know. I don't know about the vaccine.
Well, you got a lot of people passing on it, but here's the weird thing is you've got a few states. New York is one. Michigan is one. Governor Whitner is out there what's today, 13th, 2 days ago, complaining that they're not getting enough doses, that it's all the federal government's fault. And yet I go to the state of Michigan website, and it says that they have received 829,200 doses of the vaccine. They have administered 233,085
right.
doses of the vaccine. So I don't know why some states are more are incompetent and others are doing very well. I don't know what to tell you, but this idea that everybody's out there bitching about it and making a big deal about it and feels like they have to make a special accommodation, it's like, use what you have. Figure it out.
I was reading yesterday that
everybody had to make this detailed plan and nobody's following it.
Well, in New York, I believe, as far as the stuff you read, you can't even really, but evidently, say the guidelines are, you got to give it to people that are over 75. In some states, that was the first go around. If they caught you giving it to people that weren't over 75, the penalties were so draconian that some people would, if they couldn't find people over 75, were destroying the stuff they had rather than give it out to somebody younger and get called on it.
Yeah, and that wasn't the priority group in New York, by the way. The priority group in New York was some of the healthcare workers. First.
Okay.
And you're right. So if you got in trouble if you gave it to elderly people before their spot in line.
Well, but I mean, at some point, you would think there would be a number you could call and say, "Hey, I got 5 hours left on this stuff, and over 0 degrees, it's got to be at. I've got 500 of these things. What do I do?" And the answer can't be throw them out. There needs to be something else there. I mean, I don't know what it is. I don't know if you put a loudspeaker out in front of the place or whatever, but it's
well,
not. It's
how,
not
how many
from
times, whether it's a business, but definitely a big problem in government, do people just not do anything that makes common sense because they don't feel like they have the power to make decisions or to ask questions or any of that kind of stuff? I mean, that's, you know, it tells you when you see it in business, you know you have a really poorly managed business, and you know it's the same thing. Does anybody have feel like they have the ability to exercise common sense, or did they just have a list of rules? And if the rules don't tell you what to do anything, you don't do anything.
Well, I think at some point when you come into a time of crisis, Kevin, you got to stop doing that.
Well, yeah.
Isn't that the term peacetime generals versus wartime generals? I mean, no.
Well, or crappy management versus good management.
What? Hey, not to talk too much about politics, but did you see the quote this morning from McConnell that he's not all against impeachment because it'll rid the Republican Party of Trump?
Yeah, I'm aware of that. You're getting a pretty good idea about how some of these people have felt all along, and so they either completely lacked principle during during the last several years, or they've suddenly come to some kind of a realization, or what. But you know, this whole thing is just stupid. First of all, it's amazing to me that they can pull together impeachment in a matter of days, but they couldn't manage to pull together the COVID relief for months and months.
Yeah.
But aside from that, they're just pouring gasoline on the fire. And this has been a horrible week for our country in so many ways, and everybody's involved. But the purge, you know, the social media purges,
yeah,
are just incredible to me. That you have somebody out there, and they're actually public with it, like the Lincoln Project, and I know you've brought them up on the show before. People at the Lincoln Problem are building; they're having a database assembled so that they can track anybody who ever worked in the Trump administration, so they can make sure that they don't get jobs.
I don't. I to me, that is such not America. I don't. Or is this the new America? And I just missed it.
Well, it is. I have a article from the American Institute of Economic Research that I'll tweet at the break. It's called "The Liberal Left Has Gone Fully Illiberal."
Well, I think that's. But you know, the thing, the weird part of it is,
and it's not just this week. It's all along. This, you know, the authoritarianism that we've seen throughout the whole year 2020. And just the blind acceptance of curtailed liberties and, you know, businesses getting shut down and all that is just mind-boggling to me. It used to be that, you know, the left was always where the pushback came from, and it's not anymore. It's total acceptance of authority, and I think that's really a weird turn of events in my, you know, for our lifetime.
It's becoming almost mob rule, Kevin. Because, matter of fact, I was talking about this with this right wing dude the other night, and he was saying kind of the same things you are. But I said, you know, it's coming down, and just in discussions over the last four years, 6 years. We're going to put a break here in a second, but if you talk to some right wing people in their group, and they didn't give the press as much as the other guys, but if somebody was you know, a liberal, you were immediately an AOC person, and I don't want that person around me, you know, type of thing. I'm not an AOC person. I've been liberal my whole life, and now I'm in the middle. I keep being slotting differently but I feel the same way I always did. Now I guess I'm totally in the middle. I'm clearly not on this left, and I'm not on this right. But, I mean, the idea that you you chase down, you know, you not only win the basketball game or the softball game, you refuse to let the other guys go in the bar after the game. That sort of thing has been coming now for a while, not just the last week or two. For some reason, the gleefulness when you win, and you know, not having liberals in your place or not having conservatives in your place, rather than 20 years ago when, hey, you just voted the other way, what's the difference? This is not a 2-week phenomenon, I don't think. Do you?
No. It's been building for a while.
Yeah.
It's just, you know how I always say, you know, slowly and then suddenly.
Yeah.
This is where we are now.
And I don't think it's, I mean, the idea is that my concern is every time it gets worse. So if the Pelosi-Schumer-Biden putzes things for the next 2 years, and I'm looking at the economic numbers and I almost wonder how they can't. If they putz everything, then what? We have a midterm election. The Republicans, or maybe if it's just the Republicans, the moderate Republicans, that may be different. But if it's a serious right wing takes over the House and the Senate, then what? It's even worse. All your businesses now will not give money to liberals anymore. They're only going to give it to the other side because every single time now is there going to be essentially a coup? You know, like the Russians. Now communists couldn't just take over. They had to kill everybody who was there before them. And are we getting that way? I think we are. And we're not.
Well, I think we are. We are in so many ways, but we also have in this age.
Well, so Kevin, I'll save it for after break.
Information is power. Go ahead.
S&P futures minus 1275. NASDAQ futures down 29. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Al. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have S&P futures down 12 and a quarter now. They just been bouncing around during break. They were down like 10 and then went 14 and now back to 12 and a half. So we're actually going a little crazier considering there's nothing going on. NASDAQ futures down 30 and a half. Dow futures down 53. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 32.2%. FTSE down 12.2%. And the CAC round down 4. Call that flat. So down, but not much over there. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei. These guys have been all over the place. They're up 292 today. That's a full 1%. Shanghai down 10.3%. Hang Seng down 41.2%. They were up huge yesterday, as you recall, because they had some good economic news out of China. But now they've come back just a little, but they're up like 2% yesterday to Shanghai. Just as a way of review, yesterday the Dow was up 60. S&P up a dollar and a half, so call that flat. NASDAQ up 36. Yesterday was pretty slow. Bonds continue to move up. Well, not today. They're down a basis point, but still at 112. The Bund is minus 0.49. Again, it's negative, but it's less negative than the 0.59 it had been for quite a while. And the Japan is a positive 0.03, where they've been like forever. The market's moving all over the place, and their bond rate is stuck, which is kind of strange. Oil up 22 cents, 53.43. Brent up 14 cents, 56.72. Natural gas up another 2 cents, 277. So it's kind of right in the middle of this range where it went from a little over $3 to below 250 is the weather forecast for the winter. Now it's come back right into the middle of that range, which is, you know, interesting. I don't know what it says, but interesting. RBOB up another penny, $1.56. So I'm thinking the sub $2 gas is a thing of the past, at least for a while. But gold up 1070 to 1854 again, still down quite a bit from the 1950 it spiked to a couple weeks ago. Silver down a penny at 2542. Copper up another penny, 361. Big news really in the markets yesterday was all these automotive stocks are starting to move now. Ford, General Motors. Now everybody's considered in this game with the electric vehicles. So I've been thinking those things are going to move for a while. They have been long many different times. Not really all that long now in Ford and GM. Matter of fact, not at all in GM. So I guess my timing is off a hair, but interesting to see if they all continue to move up. Right now, anybody who's got a battery manufacturer, plug, and those kinds of places were on fire yesterday. Hey, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a good start again on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Not looking at any major delays coming in from anywhere right now. A couple of crashes out in the suburbs, though. We have a crash at Wooddale Road and Irving Park. And then just west of there's a crash on Lake Street at Greenbrook Boulevard. And those are two crashes causing a bit of a slowdown, but nothing affecting the expressway. So enjoy a nice quiet commute if you're heading into downtown. Weather today, it's going to be overcast, but pleasant as far as the temperature is concerned. A high of 41. Right now it's partly cloudy and 33 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 68 today. Right now it's clear and 37. In sports, quiet night last night. None of our teams were in action because the Bulls' game with the Celtics was postponed due to COVID on the Celtics roster. But there was some Blackhawks news as they prepare to start their season here in a few days. They extended their 35-year-old coach. Jeremy Colleton signed a 2-year contract extension as they want him to continue to lead the rebuild. Chief?
Just an example of individual stocks, which we don't really talk about too much. We had some people here, at PTI that were clients that were long this plug like forever. And these guys like make batteries and stuff, I guess. The thing was between $5 and $10 like forever. All of a sudden, the last 2 days, it's up like $20. It's trading 71. It's up another 5 hours this morning. All of a sudden, the thing is, when you talk about inflation, you talk about where money goes. Any stock now that's being mentioned as anything, like if all of a sudden somebody got a .com number like in 2000, it's just off to the races. We're talking about a stock that's gone from 30 to 70 in the last week. And this is happening in percentage terms all over the place. So even if you look at the averages that don't show that much of a run-up in the last couple of weeks, I mean, they've been strong this year and strong, and they've been at a record level. So, but still, if you look underneath the surface in various sectors, if a sector gets hot, it's like doubling or tripling. It's really something like I've never seen since 2000. It doesn't mean selling these things or whatever. Maybe they were just undervalued forever. I don't know. It's reaching kind of a point, Maddie and Kevin, where I remember in in 2000 where I looked at the earnings going forward, some of the estimates, and sales going forward of some of the stocks that were growing crazy in 2000. And I added about 10 of them together, and they matched like the entire GDP damn near. It's like, you know, if these guys all do what they say they're going to do, the economy's going to have to like quadruple, and yet the economy's not quadrupling. So saying be careful with some of this stuff, and I guess there's some short covering, but whatever. But anyway, Kevin, finish your thought before the why are we becoming so vindictive on the politics? I don't really recall any kind of a when Kennedy beat Nixon or when those other guys won that all of a sudden anybody who voted the other way was all of a sudden non-American.
Well, I'm trying to think of, you know, where would we trace it back to? Well, certainly the 2000 election, was problematic. And people haven't forgotten about that. Some of the Supreme Court justice things, you know, a lot changed with the Bork nomination and those hearings. You can always go back and you can find some really, really, triggering events, something that maybe was starting to boil in the first place, but really became a big deal event. And, I think, you know, one by one, you can go back on each issue and find the ones, and now the cumulative effect of all of that kind of stuff really has people divided. I'd even wonder, you know, there was a time when most people in Congress could argue all day and then be friends after the session was over. I'm not even sure how much of that there is, and I'm not sure how many people would even want it that way anymore. I'm sure there's some collegiality in there for some of the old timers, but you're just seeing it this way.
I'm not going to debate the idea that we go all the way back to the Bork in 2000, but I'm going to say that if you interview half the people that feel this way now, they don't even know who the hell Bork is.
No, but that started the process on judges, and that's just one example.
Well, but the idea that, and I guess judges might always have been. I don't know what the feeling was, and I know that.
Bork followed by Clarence Thomas, yeah. Followed by everything else that we've seen since then.
And then we had the one with Obama, where everyone took a vote for the guy. It's been that way.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's tit for tat now.
Yeah, and I don't know who is strong enough to say we're just going to stop this. I don't think it's Biden. I hope I'm surprised.
You won't be.
Well, I probably won't.
Biden's stuck. As far as I'm concerned, Biden is. He has to be beholden to the most radical sides of his party. And the reason I say that is they've already shown that there are no boundaries. There is nothing that they're not willing to do. So what's going to happen if Biden doesn't play ball with them? Guess what's coming back, and it's not going to come from the Republicans. It's going to come from the farthest left Democrats. Is you can count on the revelations from Hunter Biden and the family influence peddling. You can count on that coming back up if he's not going to do their bidding, and because they'd much rather have President Kamala Harris, who believes in their agenda, rather than Biden trying to be moderate.
Well, whatever it is, whatever time it is, maybe it isn't in our time, but someplace somewhere, if we're going to get back to being somewhat of a congenial place, not that we're ever totally congenial in this country, I'm not that naive, but. Somewhere, someplace, somebody's going to have to do a little something different than you thought he was going to do, he or she.
A wise person in this office told me yesterday that an old, boring, congenial guy that can talk to both sides of the aisle, that is a moderate, is exactly what we need for 4 years. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but it sounds like that's what you're longing for.
If he has the stones to talk to the people directly... Like Trump didn't do.
Well, Trump did talk to the people directly.
But I'm saying in terms of
just the way he talked.
Just the way he talked to them. But what I'm saying is,
and maybe this is just an old guy that is longing for old days. But he said, "I used to not care if it was a Democrat or a Republican. In fact, I voted for both sides throughout, you know, the last 40 or 50 years. I just want an old, smart, boring person that that can work with both sides of the aisle, that that goes to the middle when they take charge.
But, can you identify that person in the political realm now?
Well, he's hoping that, that Biden returns to his roots. We'll see.
See, I think that whoever it is,
Biden's been a bomb thrower all along. That this idea that he's just, you know, nice old Joe, that's not true.
Well, whatever. I mean,
it just isn't true. And you can go back through his history and find that.
But I'm not, whoever it is, and like I say, I'm willing to give the dude, he isn't even in there yet, but I'm willing to, somebody somewhere has to go back to, and I know this is being old, has to go back that I'm talking directly to the country once a week, once a month, whatever it is, and I'm going to outline where I think we need to go. And I'm going to do it in a way that, that makes sense to people, and that I'm going to get a lot of people saying, yeah, that's the direction we need to go, and I'm going to make the people drag the other idiots with them. I think that's the solution. It's the only solution. Now, who can pull that off? I have my doubts about Biden, too, but I sure as hell hope it is him.
Well, but he's already made Nazi references about some of the Republican senators. Both he and Harris both came out and said, boy, if the protesters in Washington had been black, they would have been treated a whole lot differently. Totally unaware of how the Black Lives Matter protesters were treated all summer. Hell yeah, they would have been treated differently because in Washington they got to paint their mural on a street. I mean, he's already being divisive and all the same time talking out the other side of his mouth saying we're gonna heal.
I don't know what part I said where
it's,
I was.
Tom, it's your favorite expression. Don't pee on my shoes and tell me it's raining.
I give him a 25% chance right now, but it's not zero. And I'm hoping once in a while you do bet on the long shot. And right now he's our long shot, Kevin. Right now he's all we got. So for another week or two, I'm going to at least hope for the guy.
Okay. Well, good for you. Let me know how that works out.
I'm handicapping it. But and plus, I think the dude has problems coming his way that he doesn't even smart enough to know about. I think this inflation thing, I think you're going to see in the next 2 years, you're going to see the Fed going the other way. I think you see the market down 40%. I hope I'm wrong on all this stuff, but I don't.
But I agree with you. I think there's going to be some real economic problems, and they're waiting out there to happen. And you know, we'll see how he copes with it. More to the point, we'll see where the blame lies because,
yeah,
you know, he's going to get the, it was all fine until you came along, even though everything that, you know, all the forces are in place right now that are going to do that. It's, you know, he's inheriting that, whether he knows it or not. And so that, you know, that's going to be his problem.
Well, it's the timing. It's the timing of what people think a recession is. I mean, if you read the history of the end of the Carter term, you know, and I'm not going to go into the, you know, Ronald Reagan was a god, and then Carter was a total buffoon. That simply is not true. Okay, and Carter could have, if he was a less honest guy, he could have essentially pushed the recession off till the next term, being his or Reagan's, and he didn't. He told the Fed, do what you have to do now. They could have pushed that off, and he didn't. So it looks like everything fell on his watch, but actually, if you look at the numbers, which nobody does, the darkest depths of that recession were all in Reagan's first term.
Mm-hmm.
If Reagan would not have been reelected, but people like the guy, and I'm not a Reagan basher, but if people, I'm just talking about the economic piece of it. If Reagan didn't get into his second term, if somehow or another he'd have been upset, then the next guy, then that guy would have been the hero. And Reagan would have been a bum,
so
just like Carter.
We had stagflation.
Yeah.
And that was spilling over into Carter's. And it really timed out well for Reagan because while they had the darkest depths, it also had some time to start bouncing back.
But he was also able to blame the first 3 years on Carter. And then all the bounce back was considered him. And to this day, if you were to interview anybody from that era, you're going to get 99 out of 100 that say, geez, Dutch lowered the taxes and God, the place just took off. And that's still the Republican mantra that you're going to, that you lower taxes, you lower tax rates, you end up with more money in Washington, which is such BS. I'm apoplectic. And everybody.
Yeah, there's one other thing that Reagan did better than, way better than Carter, because Carter didn't, he wasn't good at this at all. And that's that Reagan was an optimist.
Yeah.
He always had a message of optimism. This is where, you know, Biden falls down on this too. You know, even Trump had that whole Make America Great Again thing. Whatever else you thought about it, it was forward looking, you know, to a better time. And that was something that that Reagan really had. He could convince people that, you know, better days were ahead, and had the, you know, the whole optimism. And in fact, in his second campaign, that whole Morning in America thing was exactly the message that the country wanted to hear.
Well, he was a movie star. He was a nice guy. He was an honest guy, I think, and he did well with people. And it's, we almost need somebody like that right now that makes the message very simple. No, we're not going to keep fighting with each other. We're going to do this. We're not going to put all these people in jail because they voted for the other guy. No, we're not going to do that. We're not going to go after them. We're going to do this. Somebody has to be able to do that and be believable. And I'm with you that I'm not sure Joe's the man, but right now I can hope for that, right? Until he totally putzes it up. Yeah, I mean.
Let me know how it goes.
All right. But you're not hoping it doesn't work.
Of course not. I'd love it for if he could do it. I've Biden's been in politics all my life. I have a pretty good idea who he is.
Me too. That's a problem.
And that's why I'm not optimistic about it.
But I mean, Reagan, I mean, people forget that a year after his tax decrease, there was a tax increase. It was the biggest one ever. Because they were appalled at how much money the first one cost them. And the same thing would have happened if Trump would have got elected again. And I don't know what's going to happen this time, but because there'll be a tax increase of some sort. But what happened in the Reagan era, they cut the taxes on the corporations. They were too high, so they needed to be cut, right? They were like 70% or something that the guys could pay. It was a ridiculous number. So, yeah, it helped. But, again, the deductions were so much bigger that nobody paid 70%. So there's always detail behind this stuff that everybody forgets. But then when the tax increase came, it came in a form of payroll taxes. So the same people who...
It also was the elimination of a lot of deductions. So things like consumer loan interest.
But at the end of the day...
It used to be deductible. It's not now.
But if you put the two...
And that was part of TEFRA at the time.
But if you put the two bills together, certain people were losers, meaning the middle class and lower class, because their payroll taxes went up, and certain people were winners when you put them together, and it was the upper group. And that's my dislike for both parties. And no matter what you do to the Republicans, no matter what you do, it comes down to this: favor the people up top, corporations and rich people, because in their mind or their drugs they take, somehow or another that will percolate all the way through and trickle down to other people in a meaningful way. I mean, Larry Kudlow, you know, Trump's boy. I mean, the guy on CNBC before he went to be Trump's boy would say on a daily basis, the best thing you can do for the lower middle classes is to cut corporate income tax rates. And I'm going, say what? So let's see, Apple and these other guys get to go overseas and pay 5% when they're supposed to pay 35. Explain to me exactly how that's better for me when they use that money to buy up other companies and raise prices on me. Explain to me exactly how that's better for me. I mean, I never had a chance.
Well, the best two things that we've done in the last several years was, one, that we are allowed, we created the opportunity zones to encourage investment in census tract areas of, you know, low-income census tract areas. That put jobs where people needed them most, put good jobs where people needed them most, and eliminated transportation issues and a lot of things like that. So that was one.
And
I remind you all the time that, you know, increasing the personal exemption on taxes was huge, because two-thirds of taxpayers don't itemize. So, you know, just getting that right off the top was straight up a tax cut.
Well, but the families that are bigger, it wasn't.
Well, you got the married deduction, so you're saying per capita. Well, you know, okay.
What I'm saying is you're right about
you want to do that, but you used to be able to still get to create the, you know, deduct the number of exemptions that you have on your tax, you know, from your
family. I don't think so. I think if you got like five kids, it like lands on four, and if you got a blind mother living with you or something, you can't tell. But my point is...
There's still some of that stuff in there.
But my point is that the Democrats, they want to continue to this largesse towards what they consider to be people that deserve it, right? And yet all along the way, people are stealing the money. So you talk about these enterprise zones. In Chicago, if you could tell me where they are, I'll point to them and you'll say, where's the enterprise? There isn't any. I mean, it's appalling how, in some areas of the country where that money's falling on God knows where, right?
Well, I've seen it locally here where the investment actually went right into the neighborhood.
I'm saying it does once in a while, and I applaud you guys for that, but, Maddie, how's that Lincoln Yards doing?
I haven't driven by lately, but I assume there's not much work going on.
There's nothing there.
With COVID.
All they did was pull everything down. And some people got tax deductions, and they got involved in the situation, were able to go buy other people's property to, you know, less...
Was that part of Enterprise Zone, or was that some other project?
Well, but there's a big... It's all part of the TIF thing and all the other stuff. Didn't they get a big TIF thing, Manny? I think they did.
No idea.
Well, that's local. That's state of Illinois.
Well, but you end up getting...
Count on that being screwed up.
Well... All right, what I'm saying is that we need a lot of work going on now. And I really don't, all the stuff that happened last week, and let's say, for instance, that Trump didn't, in his mind anyway, incite people to do stuff. Okay, well, the fact is people did stuff after a speech, and there's some responsibility there. You should have done a better job. I'll just leave it at that. But the bottom line is, do we really have to spend another 10 days screw around with the guy where by a week from now he's gone? I mean,
no, it's like I said, the only motivation for that is that they probably feel that if they can impeach him and get him convicted in the Senate in rapid order, he can't run again in 4 years.
Is that true? I mean, I've heard that.
That's, you know, Pelosi's claiming that's one of the motivations.
Now here in Illinois, I know this, and Maddie, you should know this, because he was our guy. State Senator, was it Smith? Was it Tim? I shouldn't say the guy's name, I'm not positive, but he got booted out of the Senate in Illinois, and he was free to run again. And if he got elected again, they couldn't boot him out for the same thing, because the people had spoken. So, I mean, federally, maybe it's different.
We'll see how it works out. I don't think they're going to get it to the floor in the Senate. I'd be surprised if they do.
Well,
real quickly, I want to throw something out. I wanted to get into it a little bit, but it might be a good topic, a better topic for Lou anyway. The Parler filed an antitrust suit against Amazon.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I think it's kind of interesting because they said they were motivated by political animus, but also to reduce competition for the benefit of Twitter, which is also a customer and, in fact, is a bigger customer of Amazon Web Services. So I think that's kind of interesting. You know antitrust law better than I do. Is it not true that you don't need the memo, the recorded phone call, that if they all act in concert the same week, isn't that the evidence you need?
Well, that's
so
my,
that when you get it from Twitter, you get it from Amazon, you get it from Google, and you know all of the big tech companies all at the same time. Is that the evidence that you need for an antitrust suit?
Let's put it this way: if somebody, the antitrust that I know about or have studied, Kevin, has to do with money. So if for instance, if you were at Amazon or wherever you're talking about, and they raised your rates, okay, and all of a sudden you said, okay, then you went to the next guy, if Amazon actually had a competitor, and said, well, Amazon just doubled my rates, what are you guys charging? We just doubled ours too. You know, if Amazon were to take over the place you're currently using and like double your rates. But those kinds of suits usually come from the government. I don't know. I mean, this is a little question to Brendan.
Well, MCI's wasn't the government, was it?
Well, I'm saying if you feel you're being disparaged money-wise where nobody will take you, in other words, if people are combining, then you bring that to the government. Now, I don't know who actually, the government probably has to file the antitrust piece, I think, then you can get damages if they damage you. I don't know if they're separate. We need one of those guys to talk about that.
Or yeah, so that would be a good topic for Lou. And I think that would be, it would be kind of interesting. The one parting thought, though, that I want to share with this is Amazon's pushback on this. Amazon's response to this is that Parler is violating their rules or their standards or something like that, and it's in the contract. So this is one of those things where I don't know anything about the people involved in running Parler.
Well, I mean,
I couldn't tell you, you know, what they may or may not have done.
In my
one of the real common things that you get is that people don't read contracts. There's the legal side of the contract that the attorneys will review, but the contract should have in it, you know, how is notice served, how are disputes resolved, et cetera, before they can shut down your, you know, unplug you. And that should be in there. And if it's not, and if they just have the arbitrary right to do it contractually, then that's a foolish job by the people who signed the contract, because there should be many things where your operational people have to review a contract and see all the things that the attorney doesn't know about your business. And so I can't tell you how many times I read a
contract, you're walking in a,
and I say, I'm not doing that.
You're walking into a total minefield here legally. I wish we had more time, because if I went back to my, like, trading Fuller roots, if I had somebody who traded for me and I found out that there was a couple of out trades where he was a little slimy, he or she, well, in that day it was mostly guys, and I said, I don't want you working for me anymore, well, everybody on the floor would know instantly that he used to work for me and now he doesn't. And my reputation was always pretty good. And word would get out that I heard, even though I wouldn't tell anybody, somehow word would get out that I got rid of him because I didn't really trust him. But now he wasn't convicted. There was no business conduct type judgment against him. And now if he went to Matt Weber, he's going to say, no, if the chief doesn't want you, I don't want you. Now, does this become an antitrust thing, or is just this because...
In that case, no, although if you torpedo somebody's employment, and again, Lou can affirm this.
Yeah.
As an employment lawyer, but if you torpedo somebody's employment let me circle back and put it this way.
Why don't we do this?
Get on references from human resources people. Don't give them. Just confirm employment.
Well, okay. Wait a minute. I gave you a good reference.
Well, that'll teach you.
Yeah.
but what you know what they're saying is that, you know, from the standpoint of you know, if somebody calls into your business and says Matt Weber worked for you these days, and what kind of employee he was, look, if Matt reaches out to me and says, "Can you be a reference for me?" I will be a personal reference for him. And I've done that many a time for people, even though my company didn't want me to. But if you don't have anything good to say, there's ways to give a reference that's very tepid without saying you better not hire that guy.
I can keep you off any board, Kevin. Last comment with you. Kevin never forgets who he works for, the shareholders, and he always comes prepared for meetings, and he's not afraid to ask a tough question. I can get you off any board in the world.
They're like,
yes,
no thanks.
Can.
No, don't. No. SP Futures down 13. Kevin, talk to you Friday. NASDAQ Futures down 42. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. It's Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 14 and a quarter now. NASDAQ futures down 49. They actually were up last night, and now we're not up. We're down, I saw them up 6 at one point, and figured we might have a little bit of a bounce this morning, and we do not. We're not a bounce. We were up a little bit yesterday, but a bounce off the day, Monday's down day. Russell, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm trying to tie up what's going on in the world together and try and figure out how people should trade it, and struggling with that a little bit. Seems like there's more variables than my mind can handle.
Just saying. You don't know. I this is the middle of my workday. I just got off the phone with some European investors that focus in on the U.S. stock market. And they basically gave a really great argument as to why we're going to have a great year and a really great argument as to why we're going to have a bad year. I think that's the way a lot of people are right now, that you could argue both sides of it.
I think the people who are just predicting the great year because of how long it's been essentially great years and what's to change it, and the look at the technical and things keep going up and the money pouring into the place every day. Even in the last couple of days where the market has not looked very good, individual spots in the market, any place that becomes in favor, there's more than enough money to, like, double stocks in a week. I mean, yesterday was all the battery makers. I mean, it's unbelievable how much they were up. I mean, we had people who were long this plug at $5 and for, like, months and sold it at, like, $7 and thought they were okay. Now it's, like, $75.
I bought that stock, God, 20 years ago. That it's been around forever.
Yeah, it's been around forever. Now, finally, but I bet I was long in the last, with some of the discretionary stuff I do for people. I've been kind of bullish on, not bullish on it, but I thought it was way too cheap. Mm-hmm. I bet I've been long Ford 10 times. And if I made money two of them, I'd be stunned. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden, the thing goes up every day. I'm like, okay. You know, the best buy of the year last year had to be when we were down is Freeport. When the world was going to hell, I think it got down under $5. Now it's 31. It's the copper company, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, where's our coffee? I hope you made money on this call from
today. I'll start seeing you every Wednesday next week. I promise.
All right, cool.
If I hadn't had an early morning call, I'd be there right now.
Well, how do you? To me, let's put it this way. I think the market is higher than it ought to be because the way the Fed's put money into the system. I've gone over that 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is, are they going to be forced to turn it back or at least stop it? And I think the drums along the Mohawk was that the drums are starting to beat that we're seeing some inflation places. And they keep zeroing in on this commodity inflation and so forth. and they forget the other stuff. But we forget asset inflation. And I see what's happening, Russell, and I'm very, very concerned. I mean, I have people very close to me that are in real estate, and this is economic. And by the way, Audrey for sure is very good at what she does, and you know, I mean, she does the best thing for people. I mean, as good as, I can't believe how hard a lady works. Be honest, I mean, I hope she's not listening. Hope she's not listening because she'll wonder why I said something nice about her. But anyway, she does a nice job. But I can't here, correct my paper, Professor. I can't help but look at the fundamentals of buying a house. When you buy a house, it's all about how much you have to pay per month.
I mean, right.
It's, right. And it has nothing to do with the price of the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of the variables. There's the insurance, there's the taxes, and there's the rate of interest. Okay?
Yeah.
There's basically four variables. You don't worry about the insurance too much. It's all about, if I can afford $2,000 a month, I almost don't care if the house is $400,000 and my interest rate is 5% or 2%, or if the house is $300,000, my interest rate is 6. I mean, I can afford $2,000 if you get me in there.
Right.
That's the number. Because it's almost like rent. Yet it isn't like rent because you do have these variables that you're subject to. And also the tax piece. And I look at people buying homes now, and there's a lot of them, and they're happy as a clam because even though the houses have essentially been up, what, 15% this year, 20 or more in some areas, or people, not to mention the part that people are buying them, the last four or five deals, I think Audrey's had, and speaking out of school, probably two or three of them, people bid over the listing price.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even know how that's counted. If you count it as the listing price or if you bid over it, if that's the price. So if anything, it's even worse than the, and yet people are getting mortgages at 2.7%, 2.8%, and their monthly nut is okay. Yet I can't help it. I'm not going to say anything to anybody because not my business, but I can't help but ask if they wanted me to, what are you going to do 2 years from now if the mortgage rates are 4.5%? And your taxes are double, which I think they're going to be. Who the hell are you going to sell it to? Now, if it's just you, if it's Russell Rhodes and you pile into a place, you and the young wifey, and you're young too at the time, and your job stays okay and her job stays okay, or your job gets so much better, you have kids and one of you can quit, take care of the kids, or whatever you do, you have two or three kids, and 30 years from now, you're in the same place, it doesn't matter to you, Russell. But especially in economic times of problems like we sort of have now, the average person is in a house, what, 4.5 years? Not the 30. So my concern always is, what's going to happen 4.5 years from now when the mortgage rates are double and, oh, by the way, the tax are double? I pity the fool that is going to pay you what you just paid for the place.
If that's your intent.
I'm saying that's not your intent. That's just the way it's liable to work out for a lot of people.
Well, what I mean by your intent is you think that you're going to sell in 4 years, but if you're living in the house and, you know, maybe your taxes have most, especially in Illinois, have gone up, so your monthly nut has gone up a little bit, that increase in the mortgage rate's not going to, should not impact you.
No.
I don't think anybody in this day and age should be getting an adjustable rate mortgage. I just can't even fathom why somebody would think about doing that unless they didn't know any better, which is probably what would happen.
Well, one of our mutual friends, by the way, did that like 6 or 8 years ago, got an adjustable rate mortgage at a number where I said the guy's an absolute moron and it's done nothing but go down. So, you know, I think he started at like 4.25% and now it's like 2-something.
Yeah, well, now it's,
yeah.
I went through this process with my sister who, is very different than me. She works in a bakery, and back in the kitchen. We're very, very different people. And I had to help her find a place to live. And it wasn't, I would show her with the financial calculator what it was going to cost her every month to live in the different places that we, were looking at for her. And that's really what it came down to. So I think you're dead on with that one. You know, if mortgage rates go up, I think people will just stay where they are.
Well, that's,
you know, you just won't see a lot of turnover, if you can't, and you know, everybody anchors themselves to the price that they paid for the house, and they don't want to sell it at a price lower than that. So but I think there'll be a lot less turnover in houses.
But if it's your equity, if you put 20% down on a $250,000 home, I think that was one of the major issues in the recession of 2007-2008. Mm-hmm. No, not the fact that I never wanted to leave town because my family was here and softball was here. You know, they wanted to move me at Pullman, and I said, I'm not going anywhere. And they said, I basically put a wrench in the whole system, but I didn't care. I didn't owe anybody money. I would have just quit. It didn't matter. But my point is, I think one of the biggest problems in 2007-2008 was so many people were underwater, and it was their equity that if you didn't have a job and all of a sudden somebody offered you a job in Tulsa, you couldn't go. Because you're stuck because you paid $250 for the place, and the last thing you want to do is puke it out at $205 because now your $45,000 is gone. Well, it was gone anyway, but people, other than traders, you don't mark yourself to market every day. So how many jobs you think went unfilled because people didn't feel, it's not like, God, you see
people
these.
People don't have the ability to move around.
Well, I mean, in desperate times, they used to be able to only see it in Boulder City, the making of Hoover Dam, but now you can get the tape pretty much on YouTube. The first time I watched it, or for a couple times, all I did was watch the construction. I was so fascinated. Of course, the next couple times, all I did was look at the people. And like a year before construction was even going to start, people pulled their old jalopies, like in the Grapes of Wrath, basically next to the Colorado River, put up tents and said, we're here. Whenever this thing starts, we're getting hired. I mean, those people, they had enough. The tent was probably as good as the business was in West Virginia, coal mine. So even though they're walking around in the hotter than the hinges of hell and trying to drink water out of the Colorado River with nothing but silt in it and having babies and things there, I mean, it wasn't that much of a letdown. But nobody's going to drop all their equity on a place to move. I mean, I think that it's very, and you don't want that. You don't want 2 or 3 years from now or 4 years from now people being underwater on their homes. Russell, we just did that. Are we going to do that again in 10 years?
I think it's probably at some point it's going to, you know, catch up with people, but I don't think it's going to be the same thing that happened 10 years ago where people were, I mean, maybe this signal that we're getting toward the end, but that people are buying houses with the intent of being able to refinance them because they're going to be worth more, or buying a house with the intent of reselling it in a very short period of time.
Well, but I hope
that and that's the kind of speculative activity that would really start to screw things up.
Well, what do you make of, and I don't know the numbers of this, so Audrey would probably know, or she could find out real quick. If you were to look at the amount, the phenomenon of the last 15, 20 years of people moving back into the city up until a year ago, when you had the young people moving here from all around the rest of the country and the Google coming here and the McDonald's. Who else came over there, Matt? Somebody else big came to the west side. McDonald's moved in from Oak Brook, okay, and Google piled in, but somebody else. There's a bunch of places that piled in there.
I think Facebook has an office there.
They do too, yeah.
I think there's a lot of tech companies that have offices over there.
And Uber was going to have how many thousand people in the post office? But I'm saying if all of a sudden all these buildings that are built around here, for that group and for the people who want to live downtown with all the stuff the city used to have to offer. What if that all goes away? Even if we're talking about 2 miles from State and Madison in each direction. Well, we're not going to go to the lake, but what if all that has a 25% drop, which I think it's pretty close to having, and all of a sudden people decide, I don't ever want to live in Chicago. Somehow or another, it's dangerous, which it is now. I mean, the economic hit from this area has got to be how much money?
It's going to be absolutely. I think it's going to be absolutely massive, and it's going to take a long time for it to recover. You know, we had similar situations happen to big cities back, I think, when we first started getting suburbs in the 60s and 70s. And this time around, it's a little bit different because you don't have to go down there to work. You know, I don't have to go down there to work like I used to have to go down there to work. And I think a lot of people are going to, you know, not want to make the commute anymore.
Well, I think some, but, I think there's some of that.
Beyond that, and that I don't think people are going to want to, I honestly don't think people are going to want to live down there either, which is very unfortunate. And I see it when I go to Loyola, because Loyola is attached to, right behind us is like a 45-story rental building where the smallest apartment rents for like $2,500, which just blows me away.
It's like a studio, but yeah.
You can see into some of the apartments from Loyola, and they used to be full. They're all empty. Whenever I go to the coffee room, they are all empty.
Yeah, they're all.
So we're seeing a bunch. I think, you know, they talk about this K economic recovery where those of us who can work remotely and have, you know, these white collar jobs, we're doing okay in all of this. But people, I'll use my sister once again. My sister, who's got an hourly job and is dependent on being open during COVID and dependent on demand, because they're in the middle of Memphis where people stop by and pick things up before they go to work. That you're just going to see a shift to people being spread out a lot more. And that's going to have a detrimental impact on real estate in the city, but it's having the exact opposite effect out here where I am.
Well, it is for a while.
Bumping it up, because people that were not going to move to the burbs until they had kids or whatever are just going ahead and making that move a little bit earlier. That's what I think is going on.
I would agree, and I think there's a vibrancy. I think you're going to find there's a vibrancy of people being together that you lose if everybody's disparate. I mean, there's a reason.
Oh, I know I've lost it. I'm so socially awkward now; it's ridiculous.
God.
I'm making you speak.
You got me speechless, which is very, very hard to do. Do you put the cardigan on when you talk to people from Europe?
I'm dressed for work right now.
So yes, you need to, even if you don't smoke, you need to have a pipe.
I would like to just walk around one, because I think I'd look really smart and pensive.
Very professorial.
As long as you're cleaning it, you look very studious.
Yes. Just don't have smoke.
You don't even have to smoke it. You just walk around cleaning it.
Well, plus if you have some.
I pull out a handkerchief and clean my glasses perpetually.
There you go. See, same idea.
Well, plus if you had a big vat or whatever, the jar, whatever they call them, of that really good smelling pipe tobacco, just don't ever smoke it, because the stuff smells great. They used to have a place at Evergreen Plaza that sold all that stuff. You see all the kids would go by and open up the top and just take a whiff, because it smells, even though they weren't smoking or anything. But what, I don't know, if we're talking about now another few trillion dollars, I mean,
I love how casually you can throw that out.
Yeah, yeah.
You remember? And if you go back to the first stimulus that we got in like 2008, a lot of the debate around it was they didn't want to go over $1 trillion because they didn't want something that, you know, they just felt like that would really send a bad message. So I think they went for $900 billion.
Yeah.
But now you're just a few trillion. It's just amazing how that's changed.
Well, what it does to what I consider to be, in my opinion, because everybody knows I'm this competitive economist sort of dude, what that does, the people who can curry favor in these bills versus other people, what that does to any kind of competition, what that does to entrepreneurship, what that does to income equality, it puts a torpedo or a spear right where the sun don't shine. I mean, it really. It's about the worst thing they can do to the economy. I mean, what you're doing right now and picking winners. I mean, the idea that some places are open. I mean, you can't have a restaurant. I mean, the young lady who was in Naperville, and they closed the restaurant. And she goes, I don't understand. I'm looking across the street at the Walmart, and the place is basically butthole to elbow. And by the way, they're serving hot dogs and roast chicken. You know, I mean, I just don't get it, and I don't either, and I don't. I mean, this idea, this currying favor with people, and I had, you know, I don't, as much as I have an issue with old money. Obviously, I can't hide it. Penny Pritzker was on yesterday, and I didn't listen to the whole thing word for word, and I'm, you know, she might have said, but she got the one part that I just happened to have my pointed ears picking up, and she said something about it. I said, what about all the places that are like closed and so forth. And don't take this wrong. I hope someday in my life, actually, I don't ever want to be like that. And by the way, you are not, so don't take this personally.
Well, thank you.
I don't want this tenured professor view of the world, or so rich I don't know what to do with it view of the world, where don't worry, in 40 years it'll all work out. Okay, well, you're getting your paycheck every week for the 40 years nobody else is. And she said something about, well, you know, there's going to be 10-20% of the places that just didn't have the wherewithal to make it, and they're just not going to make it, and that's okay. In a few years, there'll be new places. There's something along those lines, and I'm going, it wasn't like they didn't make it on their own. They didn't make it because you shut them down, right? And there's a big difference. And yeah, but I care. I mean, I know that on Armitage Avenue, there's going to be, 10 years from now, a Tripoli tap. I just mm-hmm. like it. I just like Nick to still own it and not be tossed out and somebody else get it for 10 cents on the buck. Because we've done that twice in my lifetime, with the Resolution Trust and with a lot of the mortgages in 2007 and 2008. It's not government's job to make stupid decisions and then find a way to give other people, some people's assets for pennies on the dollar. I mean, a Resolution mm-hmm. Trust, the people who went to jail for that should have been the people who ran the trust, in my mind. But that's never going to happen, Russell. I mean, I don't know how much of you... First of all, don't even go into it, because it'll ruin your view of people and government. All you have to do is read the history of Resolution Trust. You will never trust what any of these people do ever again in your lifetime.
Oh, no, I'm very well aware.
Okay,
I was around for that. I know exactly what they did. You know, sometimes I feel like they've got good intentions, and you know, and the side effects mess some things up, and you know, God knows in the financial industry we experience that all the time. But some of the Resolution Trust stuff, I don't know if their intentions were, if you could even make it look like their intentions were good.
Some of the stuff that the Bush family friends ended up, or political friends, I don't know, their family friends,
mm-hmm.
ended up in Arizona at 20 cents on the buck. I don't want to even rattle off this. The owners might still be there, but I had one of our original clients here at PTI back in 1990, was a huge developer out there, and he would... Mm-hmm. Give me these stories, and Russell, they were like, you couldn't believe it was America, for God's sake. Stuff like they put together three or four properties, and they had buyers at, you know, mm-hmm. 60 cents on the buck, and all of a sudden they'd come down from Washington and say, nah, if somebody can't take 10 properties, we don't want them. We want somebody with deep enough pockets to take all 10. We don't want to do all the work, and oh, by the way, we're selling them for 25 cents on the buck instead of the 50 that they had, and they just puked them all out to the right people. I mean, that's what put GG Capital in business, right?
Most definitely did.
And but I mean, I don't. Maybe we're living too long, or I am, that I see this happening. I'm just appalled that the same thing's happening again. You would think we would have learned from it and said, no, we're not going to do that this time. But it appears we are. I mean, there's some of the places in the downtown area here, because, as you know, I talk to everybody. Mm-hmm. I happen to know that some of the places that have gone under, depending on who the owner is, some people were paying no rent the last few months and still couldn't make it. And mm-hmm. in a couple of those places, the owners have not re-rented it to somebody, if they could find somebody, but they're not even looking, hoping that things turn around fast enough to where the original person might want to come back. And I know another couple of places where they're just gone. Would have rent that they owe of $100,000, and people are going after them for it. So it's uneven all over the place. It's bad, and not even. And some people, I'm sure, have a mortgage on the buildings, and the banks are after them. Some people probably own them for 100 years, and the banks, there is no bank to go after them. And how does anyone even know how this all is going to play out, and which bank is in trouble?
They're not until it's too late, I guess, the best way to put it.
I mean, I mean, stuff just keeps flashing into my head here from the recent history. And, you know, Jim Cramer, and a lot of people love him, and, you know, John says he's a great guy and so forth, but some of the stuff the man has said that has just gone the wrong way, I mean, I wonder how he can sleep. I mean, he was so over his buddy at, who was the buffoon's name who runs Kmart? And Sears into the ground, Eddie.
The Walton family.
The guy was Sears and
Eddie Lambert.
Eddie Lambert, and how this guy knew He knows so much about real estate, and what you're really doing is you're buying a bed on, you know, forget about Sears and Kmart. I said Walmart and Kmart. Forget about what Sears is. This guy knows so much about land management. I'm sitting there going, all right, wait a minute. If I, at PTI here, if I wanted to take a look at this place and look at all this land stuff, it's such a generalization. Now, can I, if I had the time, if I could clone or if I could, you know, steal you and kidnap you where nobody would find you for 6 months, you know, could I find enough data where I could put a guy as smart as you into a spot and say, here's this huge list of runs, like they used to say at Pullman, computer runs. This is a list of every piece of property where there's a Sears or Kmart store. I want you to go through them, get a random sample, and find out whether these are plus or minus. I mean, Jim Cramer had no idea as to whether or not 40% of them were owned free and clear and were in spectacular high traffic locations to where that piece of property was worth, you know, those 10 pieces of property were worth more than the whole damn company. Or if every single one of them was leased to the max and they owed money and there were bad spots. I mean, he had no idea. You had no idea. I had no idea.
I lost money doing this, but I took the other side of that bet because it went up for a year or two the reality started to catch up with them.
Right. I mean, the hardest thing for me to value, I mean, and you see people do it all the time. If you get somebody's earnings and stocks go up or down, and I do more earnings plays than most people, okay? I love doing it. The hardest thing to value, I think, Russell, is people's balance sheets. You don't know.
Oh yeah, because you know, so much stuff can be hidden in there.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know if Fifth Third Bank has no properties downtown that are in trouble, or they got 300 and it's more money than the bank has, which I doubt, by the way, because I think Fifth Third's pretty good. But I have no idea.
It's like me telling you that I've got a Porsche in the garage, and you tell me how much you think it's worth.
Yeah.
And the Porsche in the garage is a 2012 SUV version with 300,000 miles on it. I think it's worth $9,000 or something like that.
Yeah,
you know, there's no way to tell that when you got to get on the ground, go see the things physically, and you just can't. You know, nobody has that ability.
Now, if you could still turn the mileage back, it'd be worth more.
I used to know how to do that. You can't do that.
Can't do it in these new cars.
You'd be able to pop that thing off and run the miles back a little bit.
Like, well, Ferris Bueller?
Yeah, you drive backwards?
I would do that every once in a while.
God. SP Futures down 8, NASDAQ Futures down 32. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, that's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollie, Mr. Bellweber on the board. It's Russell Rhodes, Professor Russell. Oh, when do we have to call you doctor? When are you getting your official doctorate?
I'm close.
Close.
Let me check my email. Maybe I got it.
Oh, no, God.
Talking.
By the way, U.S. Consumer Price Index rose 0.4% in December. This is what they're admitting to. I think they're over 2%. What's 12 times 4? 4.8? Just saying.
12 times 4 is 48.
Yeah, that's at
4.8. 12 times 0.4 is 4.8.
Yeah, there you go. S&P futures down 8.25, so we were up 6 last night. We were down 12, then we were down 10, now we're down 8.5. NASDAQ's down 29.50, Dow down 55. We've got over in Europe, DAX down 29.2%, FTSE down 12.2%, CAC around up 1, call that flat. We're in Asia, we've got Nikkei up 292. Nikkei's been very volatile, mostly to the upside. It's a full 1%, even though their band rate goes nowhere. Shanghai down 10.3%, Hang Seng down 41.2%, so not... The Nikkei and the mainland China have been going different directions now almost every day for whatever reason. Bonds, 1.13. It's down on 1 basis point. The Bund, minus 0.49. Japan still at 0.03. Oil, up 29 cents, 53.50. Brent, up 16 cents, 56.74. Natural gas, up 4 cents, 2.80, as we're getting back to our almost at $3 level, which is wild. We're over 3, down to under 2.50. Now we're going back to 3, looks like. RBOB up 1 cent, 156. And we've got gold railing a little bit today, 18.53. That's up 9 bucks. Silver down 11 cents. Silver's been going up a lot faster than gold lately. It's 25.32. Gold get this run over 1,900 every once in a while, and they smack it back like if it's a whack-a-mole. Copper up a penny, 3.61. Maybe we got forced traffic, weather, sports. And go out and spend that paycheck with the consumer price index starting to move.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Very quiet coming in on the area expressways. In fact, no significant delays, accidents, or stalls to speak of. So if you're heading into downtown this morning, should be nice and easy. Weather today, some sunshine early peeking through the clouds, and then we'll go mostly overcast. But a bit warmer than it's been the last few days, a high of 41 today. Right now it's cloudy and 34 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 68. Right now it's clear and 38. In sports, quiet night last night. The Bulls had their game with the Celtics postponed due to a COVID outbreak on Boston's roster. So no makeup date announced for that one yet, but there was no local teams in action in college or pro. Meanwhile, the Blackhawks are preparing to begin their season here in a few days, and they re-signed or extended their coach, Jeremy Colleton, to a two-year extension. Chief.
What is baseball? Baseball is put out their spring training schedule, and they are allegedly starting the regular season on time. Amount of fans to be determined. Is that what you're reading?
That is, yeah. And then one of our listeners sent us a note. I haven't
read this to confirm it or anything, saying that Major League Baseball will not require temperature checks or proof of vaccination when they do allow fans back into the stadiums.
Okay. But we're beholden to the local laws, right?
That's what it sounds like. Yep. So exactly what NFL has done in college.
Well, so right now, spring training, the games in Arizona, football games, were they anybody in the stands? Or I thought they had like 25% or something.
In Arizona, they had fans. Florida, they had fans. Texas, they had fans. Ohio, they had fans. Missouri. Right,
so both spring trainings will
basically
be...
Basically, the red states allow fans. The blue states don't.
All right, so as of now, it looks like 25% occupancy for spring training games.
That would sound about right, yeah.
So we can go.
We could, yeah. I love going down to Arizona for spring training in March. It's 80 degrees, and you can go to, you know, there's 10 stadiums all right by each other. It's great.
And you can always stop by the Chuck Box and get the great big one, 3/4-pound burger.
Sure.
So, not bad. Anyway, I don't think
Arizona is known for their burgers, but
that place,
I'm sure they're good at that.
As good as I was never so embarrassed in my life, Russell. We go there; we were young, out there for spring training, and I go in and they've got, I don't know if it's the one or the burger or something. Then there's the big one, so I go, "Give me the big one," and I never was so embarrassed. The guy behind me goes, "Give me the great big one," and I go,
"Oh my God!"
I go, "What the hell is the great big one?" Well, the regular one is like a third of a pound. The big one is a half pound, and the great big one is 3/4 pound. So my buddy JD's with me, and we both ordered the big one. And I said, of course, we were young, and we went out and ran 4 miles that morning. So it was those kinds of days, not like now. So I go, hey, wait a minute, we got to get one of these great big ones. He goes, we just ordered a big one. I said, we'll split it. so we ended up having the great big one on top of it and cut it in half, and God, was it good. They had a huge condiment bar, which you probably can't have anymore, but the guy's got this huge charcoal fire inside with a huge vent, and if he gets so many on there, they all start flaring up. He's got a big winch, like with a flywheel winch, and he starts yanking on the chain, and the whole thing moves up like 5 feet so the flame can't get to it. Anyway, they're pretty darn good, just saying. Not that I have a taste for burger this morning or anything, but, you know, just saying. I would have one of those, but if you ever go there, don't be a weenie. Get the great big one.
I will always go get the great big one.
Yeah, so, hey, if these interest rates start to inch up here a little bit, which it looks like they're going to.
They are.
What does that do to our, just so everybody knows, 1% increase in interest that the Fed pays is pushing now, what, $250 billion a year? It's a lot of money.
By the way, the Chuck Box is still there.
Yeah.
Since 1972. Cash only in Tempe, right on the Arizona State campus.
Yep. Let's just say the scenery's not bad either.
I'm sure it's not at the Arizona State campus.
Yes. And,
I know exactly where you're talking about now.
Yeah.
That's an awesome play.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm looking at their menu and these prices, I'm amazed at how affordable these prices are.
Well, it's right in the middle of campus. So you're
it's basically a college play. So
it's supposed to be like that. They have the great big one, like Chief talked about, which is $6.35, which here you can't even get McDonald's for $6.35.
Right.
But they have the double great big one.
I'll get it. I'm pound and a half.
Just a complete fail by Chief to only get the great big one. The double great big one is $9.45.
So it's a pound and a half?
No, the great big one's a half pound.
Oh, great big one used to be 3/4 pound.
Okay, well, now it's a half pound, and the double great big one is a full pound burger.
That's unreal. And they serve you your Coors and frozen mason jars.
Which I love that. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, I'll have to check this place out next time I'm down there.
I think we got to start back to having, maybe we should have some fun this year, you think?
That would be nice.
Hey,
have
Russ.
Some fun?
Yeah.
Fun's not allowed.
No, fun's not allowed.
Hey, not unless you're a 1%er. Fun is not allowed.
So guess who I ran into yesterday, Russell? And I'm always, cub reporter for the show. Some guy, whatever. I had a doctor's appointment. The guy doing the preliminary test is a young kid. And he tells me he's a baseball pitcher. And I go, really? Huh? And so he was at this college. And, of course, the college is not playing baseball. So he thinks he's good enough to be a pro. He's 6 foot. I mean, he's not like your 6'5 flame-throwing right-hander kind of guy. He looks kind of like a Greg Maddux size, you know. So, and he says, yeah, you know, I'm trying to hook on with a minor league. He goes, there's no scouts out doing much. There's no place, you can't go try out. Nobody's having tryouts.
Yeah.
It's like really something. He goes, the Angels have some interest, so I might be going to have a tryout with them. And I'm like, I said, really? There's like no place for you to go anywhere. And he goes, no. I mean, all last year, we're hoping this year. I don't know. I mean, you almost wonder if there's a couple of these semi-pro teams, not semi-pros, Schaumburg teams playing or somebody, but what do you do? He goes, so I'm in the medical profession, so I'm doing as best I can here, so if it turns out I never get to pitch, I'll at least have a career. And I'm going, how would you like to have your entire career possibly shut down ahead of you? I mean,
There's a bunch of them. I mean, there was no minor league ball last year.
No.
I have no idea what the intent is for this year. I do know that Major League Baseball was looking at shrinking the number of affiliates anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not going to come back to the same extent.
Yeah, I don't know.
But, I mean, there was already a plan in place to cut back on the number of teams that were affiliated with Major League teams.
Well, so I think they're looking for those guys to pay the people themselves somehow.
Yeah.
They're still going to be. We'll have to have somebody. But I asked
a lot of people don't know that, but minor league teams, they don't pay the players.
Right.
The players, for the most part, there are some small exceptions, but for the most part, the players are paid by the major league team.
Now, do they pay, this maybe is a Maddie question. The way I understand these guys get paid is if Matty Weber is a big, they use the term bonus baby, I can pay him $10 million bucks and throw him on, you know, single A, whatever, Cut Bank Montana. But then once he's there, he gets the same pay as everybody else on the team, right?
I don't think so.
I think that's the way it works, man. Am I wrong? I don't know.
My understanding is that you are correct, that they have a basic pay that everyone gets, and then the higher you were drafted or whatever, you will have your signing bonus on top of that. So, you know, if you were an undrafted guy or drafted in the last round, you're probably making the minimum, whereas the guy in the first round is making the minimum plus the $5 million signing bonus that he got and how they worked out the terms in that, and that makes up their pay structure. I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
You're right.
At its highest level.
Well, does a single-A team pay the per diem, or does the major league club pay that too? I mean, the bonus. I think they pay the whole thing, but I'm not positive.
I don't know exactly who pays what. I think Russell might be right as far as the major league team paying most of that.
And they pay the coaches too, I think. And the minor league team pays for the facility.
The major league team's paying, but you're absolutely correct. I did not realize that the your salary, your weekly salary is based on what level you're at. It's $700 a week for a AAA player.
Wow. You know what's interesting? I ran into Audrey Dragsman's party, of course, Southside party. I'm there 2 minutes, and of course I know half the people there from playing softball with him or something. So one of the kids is he was a kid at the time. He's an umpire, and he was just trying to get back into the major league. And he had had a couple of stints where he had filled in for a couple of guys on vacation in the major league. I think his name is John Tumpane. And he's around now. He's been full time for a while, and. So he was telling me how when you go to umpire school, get a load of this, talk about togetherness and having to get along. It's like the Army. He says you come out of umpire school, and if you graduate and they like you, you get assigned to single A. All right, so at the beginning of the season, they buy you, I assume, a new one, although I didn't ask, like a crummy little car like a Chevy something. And you and the other guy have your schedule, the two of you go all summer from park to park, in like the Motel 6, and you share a room.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, share a room. You just met the guy? This is like Naked and Afraid. You just meet the person you got to spend 30 days with out in the wild naked with him. And he goes, yeah, if you make it to double A, then there's you each get your own room. In triple A, they give you like a big SUV because there's three people. And you get your own room. And if you're going from, if it's far enough away, they'll actually fly you there. Like if you're going from, the Cubs are
anywhere. AAA, you've got to fly around now.
Well, it depends. I mean, he goes, yeah. You
do. Because you've got There's only two AAA leagues now.
Right.
And they're quite spread out.
Well, he claims that if
you're going from Albuquerque to Portland,
yes,
I mean,
yes,
you're flying.
Yeah.
But if you're going from Des Moines,
especially in the Pacific Coast League.
But you still have
the Pacific Coast League. I think they're flying most places.
Probably. But like Des Moines.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Memphis is in the Pacific Coast League.
Right. Okay.
So is Des Moines.
But I bet you're driving from Des Moines to Memphis.
Maybe.
Maybe. That's probably a long drive, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was with a AA team for a few years and as an employee, and I did go on road trips, which were all on the bus, like overnight bus trips. But once a year, it was Memphis in the Southern League, and there was a team in Orlando, and there was a team in Jacksonville. And the Orlando-Jacksonville trip would actually involve a plane. But it was the only flight that they got every year.
By the way, if you were to drive from Des Moines to Memphis, that's a 9-hour and 18-minute drive.
It is.
617 miles.
All right, so if you're
you could do it, but I doubt they do.
But if your series ends on a Thursday or a Wednesday, and you got Thursday off in Des Moines, and you're talking about three airfares or putting three idiots in a car and saying drive over there and for two tanks of gas instead of $1,500 in airfare, what do you think they're going to do?
Yeah, you could be right.
You're right. You're not going to drive to L.A. But the idea of the little car with a guy you just met sharing a room with him for 6 months or 4 months, you better be one of those guys that get along with people. Let's put it that way.
You gotta be a people guy.
Gotta be a people guy. So, yeah. Russell, what do you see where we are now, just in terms of, well, I gotta ask you a question, because mm-hmm. you're my theoretical volatility expert, and Mike Hart was on the last couple of days, and he's, you know, studying the stuff like every day, and yesterday he was very concerned, I don't know if it's the right word, but, let's say impressed by his study of the volatility. Is usually when you have, quote, a crisis, you'll see in the future that the implied volatility of the VIX will start to nose down. I mean, I remember when they didn't have a VIX.
Yeah, and it is not doing it right now.
It's not doing that. Even in long-term capital, all the fiascos when I was in the OEX pit, the Argentinian debt and a couple other stupid things that happened. When I say stupid, economically stupid. Yeah, your implied volatility was the sky for the first month and down. But if you went out to a leap, year and a half, 2 years out, the thing had barely budged because people figured we'll be open. But now you go out and it's the same. And he's very concerned about that. Like the market doesn't see any way out of this. There's no end to this volatility that the market's telling you where it's going to be. It's never ending.
Yeah. It's very elevated relative to what you would expect, and the way that the different relative measures are pricing things in, it's kind of like I said in the first half hour where I was talking to guys over in Europe this morning, and they were making a really good argument for the market rallying, and they were making a really good argument for the market selling off hard. Well, when you see kind of a flat volatility curve and an elevated flat volatility curve, that's telling you that nobody really has a clue what's going to happen.
Well, just
so the market's kind of reflecting that same opinion that I heard today.
Well, Kevin and I were talking the more non-market side of what's going on in the world, and at some point, politics or general behavior and the market do become one because we're valuing essentially what people own in this country, right? I mean, that's what the market does. You get this feeling that we're going down this rat hole here. That all of a sudden, okay, the Democrats won, and now you know, Trump's personality has caused some of that to happen. But by and large, we're basically vilifying anybody who might have supported the guy or any Republican or whatever it was that supported the dude, either in terms of people, you know, cutting their contributions to the Republican Party, and even much to the point where McConnell now appears to want to be able to jettison Trump as being a Republican as a way to combat that, you know, which I don't know if that's the right thing to do or not. I'm thinking maybe not, but that's another discussion. But now are we set up to where this I'll say vindictiveness that the, you know, the, however many people, 60 million people have voted for Trump are all now idiots. I mean, and not just a few that are idiots, but there's a few idiots that voted for Biden too. That now everybody mm-hmm. who did that should be, you know, we're not going to give any contributions to the Republican Party. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to let them in our schools. We're not going to do anything. And now all of a sudden, if you take that to the extreme, if Biden screws up and now it's tit for tat, and the Republicans do a big sweep in the midterm elections, which could very easily mm-hmm. happen, because I don't see anybody, I don't care who you are, Solomon, solving everything that's going on in the world in 2 years. I mean, I hope he does, but I don't see how you can. Then what? Then it's even worse. Then we're not going to give money to Democrats. Democrats are all a bunch of bleeps now. I mean, I don't see that mentality goes very far and still have a country that is moving forward, Russell. I mean, I just don't. I mean,
no, there needs to be. Unfortunately, the thing that happened last week, I think it's going to make it and the fallout from it is going to make it a lot harder for, you know, both sides to reconcile over anything. I'm afraid that's the big fallout, and you know, I'm afraid that was kind of what Trump wanted to happen. He just wants to make things more difficult for the person that comes after him.
Well, I think so too.
And in a roundabout way, this has done that. The whole shutting people down on Twitter, and you know, people getting fired because they went. I know a couple of people that they didn't go in the Capitol building, but I know a couple of people that were there. And they're very low profile. In fact, they don't even have Facebook. They don't do anything on social media. But you know, and they're married and work for the same company. I'm afraid, you know, that company might they may feel some backlash if people knew that they were actually there. And they were just there to protest. They weren't there to bust in and break things up.
Well, I mean, if you were to take the people on the back row of the Black Lives Matter, you know, mm-hmm. watching the idiots go into the Macy's, I don't think they should all be fired. I mean, do you?
No, I don't think they should get. You know, if you're kind of wandering around downtown and watching the activity and keeping a safe distance just because you happen to be there, I don't think you should, you know, be prosecuted for happening to have been there. I think they should only go after people that actually went in the building. But then the people that, you know, the first guys that busted in there. That's one thing, but when the Capitol Police just kind of get out of the way and, you know, should you get in a ton of trouble for kind of just wandering in there and looking around a little bit and not causing any damage?
I know
it's against the law. I understand that.
But you and I know we didn't belong in there.
Yeah, no, nobody belonged in there.
Yeah.
They totally didn't belong in there.
My question,
I'm
getting no end of heat. This week I'm in the middle, so I've been beset. Let's see, Saturday night, other than I went to this place that's open, and of course the place is all right wing, and I'm doing the best mm-hmm. I can to hold my own, because now being in the middle is like being AOC, for God's sake. And then of course on Monday morning, I get beset from the left because I defended some of the, it's, I mean, there's no middle on this. I mean, if you're in the middle.
No, there's not. Although you would, you know, it's like the, every single Republican is being painted as a really, really bad guy because of what a few hundred people did in Washington, D.C. last week.
Right.
Yeah, and we're not all like that.
And what I you did, know, Russell, and I, we got a couple of minutes here, but I, actually we got a couple, but I we got only 90 seconds, but we'll talk more about it next week because it's a tough one to wander down, but everybody, the stuff that's been going on to individual people in this country for the last 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
When you see, you know, hospital bills that are putting people under it at the hospital, can't even justify the number. I mean, things, the little, you know, shots in the ass with the sticky umbrella that our citizens have been taking from government and from these big companies now for a while. Everybody knows I'm the most nonviolent person on earth, but I also know everybody has a breaking point.
Yeah, and that's I. What you're saying is my sister called and she said, you know, why are people doing things like this? And I went down and she's very liberal, and I went down a path that you're trying to go down right now. And she sort of, I think she actually understood what I was saying. It's just there are a certain, you know, there a certain large group of people in the U.S. that have reached a frustration and breaking point.
Yes.
And on both sides.
Yes.
And you're seeing, that's why you've seen what you've seen in the last year or so.
And I mean, the idea that the people, like again, Penny Pritzker's on yesterday, that the bar owners of the world and the blue jean factories of the world that were shut down when other people were able to sell the stuff right across the street from them, there's a frustration level there that you can't, all of a sudden you can't feed your family and they're feeding theirs. I mean, I'm not saying, but I think the people who are in power need to be very aware that you can't let that happen, because at some point it does become violent. I mean, we're not there yet. I mean, and I would say that we're nowhere near there yet. But anyway, but the point is, you know, sometimes you don't get to choose, unfortunately. Russell, thank you very much, buddy. We'll see you next week.
Up.
Don't forget the coffee. That's a big news. Well,
for God's sake,
we'd buy it for him if the places were open down here. We're locked into a place that's not open, for God's sake. What can I tell you? SP Futures down 8 and NASDAQ Futures down 26. Please on the coffee, Russell. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.